Blog Talk Radio.
Texas on Friday, January the 25th, and this is, of course, day number 25th of 2013. Today we're going to catch up with Dr. Ileana Johnson-Poe as we do on Fridays. We've got a lot of U.S. economy, a lot of world economy news that we want to get to. Of course, Dr. Johnson is an author as well as an economist. There are also some breaking stories this morning that we're going to be getting into, so it's going to be a very topical program, to say the least, but we begin by saying hello to my good friend Leonard from Avalon. How are you, Leonard?
Morning, Silvio. How are you today?
Absolutely great. Well, you got to fill me in. What's going on with Avalon?
Well, you know, we've been working in the chemical industry for a number of years. Companies in the U.S. that manufacture chemicals and export them, or they've got plants overseas, and they've got just a whole range of documentation that has to be put into the various languages. And, you know, now we've been doing most of the EU languages, of course, Chinese and Korean and Japanese, but now we're adding into some of the smaller. We just started this week doing documents in Slovak and Macedonian. You know, it's nice to now be expanding the number of languages that we do these type of technical documents in. And, of course, you know, working for companies like Phillips 66, ConocoPhillips, and just other big chemical manufacturers, it's a fun business, and it's good to support what they're doing for U.S. exports.
Absolutely. Now, just for curiosity, so that some of our listeners may understand, what are some of the types of documents that you would translate? So, let's say, just give me an example of one document.
Well, like material safety data sheets, the technical documents that describe the properties of the chemical, how to handle it, how to store it, ship it, what do you do in case of spills, fires, emergencies. So just basically these are standardized documents that have been harmonized worldwide in a standard format so that as these chemicals and products move overseas and back and forth, this type of information is available with the shipment on how to handle and treat the materials.
We put
those things, of course, into whatever language the export country requires.
Right, and I think this is one of the great stories, success stories, to say the least, here in Texas, is the amount of exporting that we are doing. You know, Texas has really become a very dynamic exporter.
It sure has.
And companies like yours are obviously a part of it.
We're glad to be a part of that movement. Yes, it is. It's good for Texas and good for the country.
Right. And of course, we here in the Dallas area with the great airport that we have, all of the pro-business attitudes that we have, I mean, it's just great. And it's good to see Avalon participating in that amazing export business. Now, we have a link to the website to your company, and if anybody has any questions about translations, of course, click on that and call Leonard and tell him you heard about it on the radio today. One of these days, Leonard is going to say hello to me in every one of the languages that he translates. That's your challenge, my friend.
I'll work on that.
You work on that, because I am, I know you can say hello, and I know you can say hola, but beyond
that,
I'm not sure. All right, Leonard, have a great day. Keep going. You guys are doing great.
Okay, Silvio. Thanks again.
All right. We're going to take a little break, and we'll be back with Dr. Ileana Johnson-Poe right after this. Thank you. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, and I know that Dr. Ileana Johnson-Poe can say hello in various languages, and I'm going to put her to the test right now. Okay, hello? Hola?
Okay.
Hola. Okay, hola is Spanish. Hello, of course, English.
How about ciao in
ciao?
Italian? Yeah,
okay,
bonjour.
Okay, well, that's goodbye, isn't it?
In French.
Isn't it ciao? But wait a minute, is it
no,
ciao?
No, it's actually hello, goodbye, how are you? It's kind of a generic.
Oh, okay, all right. So in Italian,
bonjour.
That...
bonjour.
Okay,
bonjour.
All right.
Guten Tag.
Okay,
guten
in
Tag
what language
in
is that?
German.
All right, so we got five. You got five, so keep going.
Dobre utro in Russian.
Okay, that's six.
Buona ziua.
Seven.
In Romanian. Seven.
So we got you up to
see.
Seven already.
Bonem diem, good day in Latin.
Okay, so we got you up to eight. So I'm going to quit right now. I don't want you to stress too much. But we got you up to eight already. That's pretty good. Now, by some chance, would you know Macedonian?
No, I don't. Sorry.
Yeah, that's interesting that Leonard is doing business in Macedonia. Well, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show on Fridays. There are some breaking stories today that we're going to get to, aside from our usual review of the economy, some very interesting stuff happening this morning. But I just want to quickly remind everybody, on this day in history, just to show you how things have changed, 1963, on this day in history, was the first televised news conference. There had always been, of course, news conferences. They kind of got started with Roosevelt and then into Truman and into Eisenhower. But President Kennedy had the first televised live news conference today in 1963. Of course, now we kind of take them for granted. And then 1995, maybe you're familiar with this. In 1995, we almost had a nuclear war because the alarm systems in Russia detected missiles coming in, and they didn't have no idea of what was going on, and they put all their armies on alarm, and of course it turned out to be a false alarm. But that has always been my scary thing, you know, that we would start a war by mistake, you know. That were you familiar with that story?
I have heard about it, where there was a town in Norway that was actually doing or shooting instruments for scientific measurements. So that was kind of interesting. And I found one recently where some rogue Russian tried during the Soviet era in the 1980s actually stole one of their premier ships and hijacked it and made it all the way to the North Sea. He was going to go around the North Sea back to the Soviets and try to remove the government. And everybody knew what they were doing in Sweden, and apparently they didn't say anything because they were not supposed to have spying devices or listening devices that they had just purchased from the U.S. with some of our funds. So I think had they said something, the Soviet Union would have been gone a lot sooner, but and communism.
Yeah, that's an interesting story. Well, of course, we talk to you on Fridays, and I always ask you how your book is doing. So how's your book doing?
Well, the book is doing still very well, UN Agenda 21, Environmental Piracy, under globalism and environmentalism, of course. But what was interesting, a couple of days ago, guess who was ahead of me, right above me at number two, and I was at number three? It was Al Gore. Apparently he's publishing a book sometime at the end of January. I'm not going to say the name, but again, it's about this global warming hoax. And I thought, oh my God, people are still buying into this debunked global warming hoax. So I was just shocked.
Yeah. Well, of course, you know, to be honest, when your name is Al Gore, you're probably going to get a lot of people who are just going to buy your book because your name is Al Gore. And unfortunately, that's what happens with him. But we're not going to let him pass you, though.
Well, we better not.
Yeah, we're not going to let Al Gore pass you. I mean, that would be these are just preliminary numbers. We're not going to let that happen.
And here's another interesting development about the book. One of the chapters that I wrote is about a lady named Martha Bonetta, who made the national news last year. And I wrote a couple of articles about her. Then they both went viral. She has a small farm in Virginia, and she was raising and growing a lot of things. And to make a long story short, the Board of Supervisors told her that she could no longer sell her produce, that she was violating some kind of code they had in that particular county, and she was going to be fined $5,000 a day. So recently, one of our delegates has introduced the Bonetta bill, and it's going to be heard or go to the subcommittee on Monday. So we're going to Richmond to, you know, make sure that our representatives take this seriously. It's called the Right to Farm Act, is HB 1430. So I'm really, really proud that I was part of this, that I made Martha Bonetta part of my book. And that's why I think it's important that people should read my book. For $2.99 is the best investment, because UN Agenda 21 is infringing on our private property and on our right to have an economic activity on our own land. She was just having a party for eight little girls, and she was told she couldn't do it.
Right. Yeah, it's just crazy, crazy.
It's absolutely insane.
Crazy, crazy stuff. Insane. I mean, it's a bureaucracy out of control, and that's one of the worst things that can ever happen. Now, there were some breaking stories today, and we want to get to them because you know, we like to be topical on our program because they matter a great deal. But there was I guess just to set the table, a few months ago, maybe a year ago, President Obama made some recess appointments to fill the National Labor Board, and a lot of it had to do with the fact that the Boeing Corporation wanted to build a plant in, I believe, South Carolina. And that's kind of the story, the context of the story. So he made some recess appointments, very pro-labor recess appointments. And the president can make appointments, but there are restrictions, of course, during recess. And today a court has actually determined that these appointments were unconstitutional. I think that's quite a challenge to this administration. I thought maybe you could fill us in on that.
Yes, the Federal Appeals Court actually overturned President Obama's controversial three-person recess appointment of last year to the National Labor Relations Board. And it was deemed illegal because Congress was still in session. They had only left town for a few days. They were going to come back. And the Federal Appeals Court said that recess appointments do not apply to intra-session appointments, meaning that is you're appointing somebody quickly for 3 days while Congress is out of town. It has to be the Congress has to be what they call sine die, which is Latin for without a day. In other words, they have finished the year, and they're not coming back until the next term. So that's really good news for the labor bullying.
Of course, now, the big question I have, and we'll see, I guess, in the next day or so, is whether he will respect that ruling, because this
that's
is a man who,
yeah,
this is a man who I believe is expanding presidential powers, and I'm thinking of writing an article called Where Are the Imperial Presidency Democrats? Because when President Bush was president, obviously there were all kinds of accusations of the imperial presidency, and Bush never did anything close to this. But you have this, you know, these appointments. Then you have the ruling or the decision last summer going around Congress with the young dreamers, you know, the immigrants. It seems like even the Libya decision, where I thought was atrocious to go into Libya or participate in a war without even getting a resolution from Congress, as President Bush did with Afghanistan and Iraq. It just seems to me, or even Afghanistan, when he escalated the conflict, you know, to 30,000 troops. I mean, I've always felt that Congress should be on board on these things, and this president doesn't seem to believe in that. So I'd be curious to see how he reacts to this kind of spanking. I mean, it's pretty. I don't recall. Maybe you know more than I do, but I never recall a court this directly, spanking a president. I don't remember. You have to go back to, maybe that's too far back, but you have to go back to the, you know, Nixon and the tapes back in the summer of '74, which is what eventually set up Nixon's resignation. I'm not saying that's going to happen here, but that's the last time that I can remember a president being really spanked this hard. I don't know if you have any other memory.
I can't think of others, but it's going to be interesting to see. But I do have something else that's just breaking that's very, very interesting, and it has huge implications for the United States. Apparently, the Secretary of the Treasury, Tim Geithner, wants to waive or to grant the Chinese a Chinese businessman an espionage waiver. What has happened, this company, which is the third largest in the communist China, it's a car company, has bought a failing battery company here in the U.S. It's called A123 Systems, bought it for $249 million this company had started under the Obama's economic stimulus program to develop sensitive lithium ion battery technology, which was originally created by NASA, and it is used greatly by the U.S. Defense Department establishment. Anyway, last October, this A123 Systems filed for bankruptcy, and this company from China, Wenxiang, and I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing it correctly, but they beat out Milwaukee-based Johnson Controls, Inc. And it's interesting because if he waives the espionage requirement, that means that this company is going to have control of our very sensitive and highly classified technology. And we use this type of battery power in just about everything that involves our national security. So it's a very, very serious issue. And there's a lady in Congress, Representative Marsha Blackburn from Tennessee. She's spearheading a group to pressure Geithner to withhold approving the deal. So if this goes ahead, it sounds like espionage might be soon legal if you own a large enough portion of the U.S. debt. So it's really
and the Chinese
scary.
Do have a. I mean, I don't know what percentage they have, but they have been. They basically been the facilitators of all this debt financing.
Of course.
All this deficit financing. I mean, without the Chinese, I guess they're the only economy big enough to lend us that kind of money, right?
Of course, yes, that's true. The other news I have, breaking news, everybody knows about the World Economic Forum, I think, in Davos, Switzerland. And I think they should know because some kind of athlete, I don't know if he's a football player or a baseball player, I'm not sure, but he actually went to Switzerland, to Davos, to the meeting, and he said, well, I'm not political, really. I'm not making a statement. Really? Why are you there? But he was putting in two incorrect sense, you know, about the global warming debacle. But what's interesting about this meeting in Davos, aside from the 50 economic important issues, that some of which have nothing to do with economics, they identified five things, and I'll read them quickly. One is the runaway climate change. They say that, well, we're at the point of no return and that the Earth atmosphere is going to become pretty soon very inhospitable for humans. Number two, that there's in regards to significant cognitive enhancement, that it's going, we're going to have ethical dilemmas. Similar to that doping in sports, like the guy in cycling, Armstrong.
Yes, Armstrong,
that
right,
that we might start to extend into daily working life, and there will be an arms race in the neural enhancement of combat troops because of this. Number three, they said that there could be rogue deployment of geoengineering. And they mentioned manipulation of the climate, and that's bad because a state or private individual could use it unilaterally. Really? I think it's bad all across the board. But anyway, number four, they said that costs of living longer, that medical advances are prolonging life, And long-term palliative care is expensive. Covering the cost for old age could be difficult. So what are they proposing to do? Kill people? Because, you know, the UN has talked about this.
Yes,
but not least, the discovery of alien life, and I just kind of laughed here, and they're actually saying that there's proof of life's existence elsewhere in the universe. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, that's just what the UN ought to be spending their time on.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know, finding out. But because I wanted to make a comment about what you just said.
Yeah, go ahead, make a
comment.
No, I was
just going to say,
I
know you want, there's another breaking, and I've got a breaking one, too, that I want to touch after you. We're kind of going from breaking to breaking today, aren't we? That's kind of fun. But I was going to say that you said that they believe that the world is becoming inhospitable for humans. I think that was the line you used. And I would like to to amend that by saying I think the world is becoming inhospitable for humans who want to work and pay taxes. I mean, that's what I think. Because
that's very good, Sylvia.
You know, those are the people who seem to be under attack. And just about, we'll talk about France later. But I mean, my goodness, whether it's here or anywhere else, the world is becoming very inhospitable for people who get up in the morning and go to work and make the, make our economy happen. The other thing I wanted to say, you talked about killing people. Well, aren't we kind of doing that every day with abortion? You know, we were, at least in the United States, we abort 3,000 babies a day, 53 million since Roe v. Wade. So I think the UN and the left is actually doing a pretty good job of killing people, even if they don't see it that way. But anyway, I just wanted to put those two things in. Well, you got one more break in, and I got one more break in, so you break first.
Okay. This one is, again, about China and vis-a-vis the EPA and their claims, outrageous claims. January, there was a temperature inversion in January over China that caused the air to stagnate over Beijing, and there were the emissions of air pollutants, of course, concentrated under this stagnated air, and it was the particulate matter, which is soot and dust, which the EPA calls the PM2.5 in EPA speak. Apparently, caused a lot of distress that the Chinese government actually allowed the press, to complain and citizens to complain about this vociferously. But what is interesting about the average level of this PM2.5 in U.S. air is about 10 micrograms per cubic meter. And Mrs. Jackson, who is the EPA chief, testified that this PM2.5 kills about 570,000 Americans annually, which is about 25% of all U.S. deaths. And she said that it can kill people within hours or days of inhalation. And the EPA has estimated that every 10 micrograms per cubic meter increase in this PM2.5 increases daily death rates by about 1%. So based on this, Beijing's PM2.5 levels had peaked at 886 micrograms per cubic meter during this January inversion, which is an incredible 89 times greater than our average in the U.S. So if we calculate the EPA risk estimates, we should expect, obviously, that the daily death toll in Beijing would have to skyrocket accordingly, right, by 89% on a same-day and next-day basis, because she said it kills people immediately. It causes sudden death. Well, Beijing has almost 20 million people and an annual death rate of about 500 per 100,000 deaths. So this means that about 100,000 people die annually in Beijing, or about 274 per day. So that means in this particular inversion, their deaths per day should have increased by 518, right, immediately. Well, and of course, it didn't happen, which proves that all the EPA assertions were just lies. They're not based on in fact.
Oh, wow. You mean the EPA has been lying to us for a while, huh?
Yeah.
Now, that is really, that is, we here in Texas have been feeling that way for quite some time. I'm glad to see that other people are picking up on the fact that the EPA is lying. But, I mean, the EPA, now, I mean, we've talked about this before, but the EPA is really, to me, of all of the agencies, and there's a lot of agencies out of control, but I think the EPA is probably, I mean, just totally out of control. It's just like a crazy horse running around, and nobody can control it, you know.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I wanted to give credit to Steve Malloy for getting the math for us. So.
Yes, that is a good thing. Now, another story that broke here in the last 24 or 48 hours is that women now will be put in combat, or they'll have a chance to go into combat. And I personally, I mean, I guess I react to that. Maybe I'm too old-fashioned. I just didn't think that women should be doing that kind of activity. But there are also some very rational reasons to oppose it. You know, Barry Jacobson, who's a friend of our show, and he writes a blog about military history, he was telling his own story. He was a special service type of soldier. And he was saying that there were times when he had to carry as much as 130 pounds on him and be out in the field walking for many, many miles. And he doesn't think that there are women who can do that. I mean, how can you, most, you know, a woman, you know, weighing 120, 130, you'd be carrying your entire weight. I mean, that would really be a problem. And there's also the idea that in combat, sometimes you have to pick up your comrades who are fallen or hurt or whatever, and literally pick them up and take them somewhere. And he, you know, that's another challenge. But who came up with this crazy idea of having women in combat? I mean, where did that come from?
One word: liberals. The liberal lobby.
Yeah.
The feminazi.
Right.
It's interesting that you bring this up, because my husband and I were having a conversation about this morning. I mean, how is a woman going to be able to carry a 6'4" man who weighs 240 pounds?
Right.
Not to mention, you know, all the gear, which weighs a minimum of 80 pounds, and you have to carry it long distances and through the desert. My husband is a vet. He went to Afghanistan and Iraq, and they had to march for long distances with their full gear on, plus you have the heavy helmets and the breastplate and all that weighs a lot as well. So it's absolutely insane, because I don't care how strong the woman is, you cannot carry your full weight.
Yeah, I mean, more. Sure, but that is so sensible that's why, you know, decisions like this, you scratch your head and you go, wait, what are these people thinking? I mean, maybe there's a woman out there who could do this. I don't know. I doubt it, but it just seems to me, what's the point? Women can do a lot of other supportive roles in the military. In fact, they are doing it. They fly airplanes. They fly, they fly helicopters. But there's another issue, too, and that is when a woman is captured in battle, it changes things a little bit, because, you know, we recall that young woman who was captured and was in Iraq, who in her, you know, when she wrote her book or something, she said she was raped several times. So, I mean, it's a totally different, you know, it's just a totally different situation. I'm just kind of surprised that something like this would go through. And the way these things always seem to happen, you know, just I guess at the very end, you know, Secretary Panetta makes a decision like this as he's leaving town. But isn't this something that Congress is supposed to be involved in? I mean, I didn't know that the President of the United States could authorize women into combat. I didn't know that he had the authority to do that.
Well, he is the commander-in-chief, so, and he has the power of executive orders at infinitum, so.
Yeah, all right, well, maybe you're right. He is the commander. Yeah, you're right. He is the commander-in-chief, and maybe this is a decision that he can make, but this is such a, this is such a large decision, I guess that's what I'm trying to say. I mean, this is such a decision that has such huge impact, not only on the men who are serving, but the officers. To me, this is a decision that they should have gone to the military and said, what do you think of this? and let the military study it. And instead of saying to the military, you got to do this and you've got a couple of years to do it, and then putting the officers in a situation where they have to obey the law or they have to resign, I guess, their post. I mean, it's just, to me, it's just insane. That's the last thing in the world we got to be doing when we're fighting wars and cutting back the military is engaging in this kind of social engineering with our troops. I've always felt that there is only one purpose that you have an army, and that is to defeat your enemy as quickly as possible. And you should never play with the readiness or the efficiency of your armed forces. That's just my feeling, but maybe I'm not a liberal. That's probably why.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Do the military leaders still have the courage to say no? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
I'm not involved there. So.
Yeah, I don't know either. I don't know how that works either. So anyway, I think it's a bad decision. Well, we got a few things more we're going to get into. You have an article that you want to get into. We want to talk a little bit about France. We want to talk a little bit about the American economy and some attitudes on the part of the American people. So we're going to take a break. We're going to hear from Aaron Clary of the book Worthless, and then we'll be back with Dr. Ileana Johnson-Poe for our second segment.
Parents, when you talk about your children, do you say, I can't wait for little Jimmy to grow up to become a stock boy, or I can't wait for precious little Susie to grow up to become a stripper? No, of course you don't. You love your children. The problem is you're unconsciously sending them down that path unless you have a heart-to-heart talk with them about what to major in college. Hi, everybody. My name's Aaron Clary, author of the book Worthless. Look, you or your children are going to blow $50,000 to $100,000 in tuition getting this degree. Not to mention your children are going to spend 4 to 8 years of their youth earning that degree, and worse still, if they make the wrong decision, they'll not only be in debt, but they won't have a commensurate increase in their earnings potential, making them financially crippled for the rest of their life. This investment has to pay off, so ensure they choose the right major. Buy my book, Worthless. In my book, Worthless, I explain in clear language why some degrees are worthwhile and while others are literally worthless. We go over starting salaries, unemployment rates, but more importantly, the economics of why some degrees are better than others, explaining to the kids, not merely saying, major in this, don't major in that. You can find Worthless on Amazon.com. It's $13 in paperback, $5 on Kindle. I promise you it will be a better investment than college itself. That's Worthless. You can get it on Amazon.com.
That's right, and we have a link to the Amazon website or to Aaron Clary's website for the book. Just click on that and go directly to the book. I tell you, it's a good book if you've got high school kids. I mean, it's urgent. You got to read it if you have kids in high school and they're thinking about going to college or contemplating all the steps to go to college, like all those loan agreements you're going to have to co-sign. So it might be a good thing to check out the book if you've got kids in high school. Just a quick heads up on our next Cuban Legacy show, we're going to be talking about Cuban-American politicians. And, of course, the two that come to mind are Senator Cruz of Texas and, of course, Senator Rubio of Florida. But there's also Senator Menendez of New Jersey, who I don't know how he ended up being a Democrat. I'm going to have to talk to the people of the Cubans in New Jersey. I have no idea how Menendez ended up being a Democrat, but he is. And then, of course, others in the past, like Senator Martinez, who was the first Cuban-American to have been elected to the U.S. Senate back during the Bush presidency. And, of course, I will say something about Mel Martinez, who actually is from my dad's hometown. Now, he's a little younger than my dad, but my dad used to know him when he was in my dad's hometown. They kind of grew up together. I think they were about maybe 10 years apart, but my dad used to know Mel Martinez back in his little hometown in Cuba. Well, let's get back to Dr. Ileana Johnson-Poe. Do you have any other breaking stories? Did anything happen while we were doing our break?
Yes, I have one interesting thing from
our
favorite economist, pessimistic economist, but he's always right, Nouriel Roubini.
Oh, wow.
From New York University. He is at Davos in Switzerland. And he told the Davos audience that our loose monetary policy that is creating, you know, printing all this money and buying bonds until our unemployment contracts to 6.5, he said that the Fed may be misjudging how far down this so-called jobless rate can be pushed without igniting inflation. And he said to the audience that this loose monetary policy is going to create a global economic system which is biased or tends to create constant bubbles. And in other words, we will see those coming. And he has an interesting quote that I absolutely love. He says, and this appeared in The Guardian, we have to go to the UK for reliable information about the U.S. Isn't that interesting? Since our the mainstream media doesn't report news accurately. He says, over time, you get zombie banking, zombie corporations, zombie households, which is damaging in the long term. So zombie banks refers to financial institutions that are insolvent but are propped up by cheap money from the government, money that's being created or borrowed from China, since we were talking about China.
Yeah.
And Rubini maintained that there could be unintended consequences if the central bankers make an error in this quantitative easing exit strategies, because they've had, how many have they had? One, two, and three. Yeah, they had. So he says we're probably going to have QE to infinity. And what quantitative easing is, you're monetizing the deficit. You're either printing money by buying these bonds, and it's really one sector of the U.S. government buying bonds from another sector, because the population in general has shrank in terms of buying their bonds. They don't trust them anymore, and I'm not sure China is buying them as heavily
as they used to. No, you're right. And what we've talked about before, and what really concerns me about our financial policy, is that we've been very lucky so far, very lucky so far, that the interest rates are so low that we're almost borrowing money at, you know, such a low interest rate. But you take that interest rate from whatever it is right now, let's say you put it up to 4%, 5%, 6%, and now all of a sudden your interest expense becomes perhaps one of the biggest portions of your debt service. And that could really just choke the economy completely. So I mean, I don't know when those interest rates are going to go up. They could be, maybe they're politically politically motivated, but I just fear. I don't know, what are the interest rates right now, like 2%, 3%?
Not really. I mean, the government's interest rate for the Federal Reserve banks is zero. They're borrowing at zero. So, Mr. Bernanke has kept this policy this way for quite some time. So this is what has artificially propped up the economy, because they keep creating this artificial money that's not really backed by goods and services, is not backed by the value of gold, and it's not backed by any value. Remember, they floated about a week ago this idea to print a platinum currency that would be artificially worth $3 trillion, and the government withdraw from it, and I think that's ludicrous. That's just another scheme of creating money that doesn't exist, thus creating more debt for the United States.
Right.
We tried, I believe, before we printed a lot of money and banking became the model for the Western world, we did have something called species, which is spelled S-P-E-C-I-E-S, and that does not refer to an animal species. A specie was a piece of paper that you got from the goldsmith in your village, to whom you took an amount of gold or silver, and then you drew, you had drawing rights against that. You would go to various businesses in town or in the village, and you would buy things, but it was backed by value, either gold or silver. But this coin, and I believe they dropped that idea, was just another Ponzi scheme, so to speak.
Right. Well, all I can tell you is that we've been very lucky because of the interest rates, but at some point they have to go up.
Of course.
When they do, I don't know. But you know, if you're at zero and they go up, let's say, to 2%, that's a lot of interest expense.
Of course.
Yeah, so that's what worries me a great deal. Now, interestingly, I sent you an article about Americans not being very optimistic about the economy, and there is I guess there's also a story this week that this has been the slowest economic recovery as far back as we can remember. So the economy's not recovering. Americans are not very optimistic. What do you make of this? I mean, I'm sitting here saying, okay, with that kind of a landscape, how was this man reelected? So it really makes you wonder, you know, I mean, what were these people thinking?
Well, as long as they receive their welfare checks and they're not really suffering in terms of food and other necessities, as long as they're getting President Obama money, quote unquote, they're okay. Once people start suffering and, you know, there's not enough money to go around to pay all these welfare checks and 99 weeks unemployment, then things will, perhaps they will wake up. But until then, how are they going to wake up? They think the economy is okay. They keep lying about the unemployment rate because all these long-term unemployed become discouraged workers and they literally disappear. Hence, you have a lower and lower unemployment rate, which is one big lie. So I don't know. It just shocking to me that particularly in my area, people were so enthusiastic on Inauguration Day, and I was just shocked. I don't understand what's wrong with these people's thinking.
Well, I don't either. I don't either because, you know, it just doesn't – I think they're all basically operating from emotion, and they're not being very logical about, you know, about what is around them. And so I just hope. I hate to say that things are going to get so bad that maybe they'll wake up, because what that means is the economy is going to get bad for all of us, even those of us who don't need to wake up. So I'm you know, hopefully they'll wake up before that. But let's move on to France for a second, because there's.
Can I say one
yeah,
more thing
ahead.
Before
go
you
ahead.
Move to France?
Yeah.
You would think that these people would wake up, but they can't because they're listening to the mainstream media that repeats the same lie over and over and over, and human nature is such that once you hear a lie repeated enough, you begin to believe it. And not even the fact that recently the Republican senators plan to introduce a bill next week that would ensure priority payments in case they're not going to raise the debt ceiling again at the end of February when the current debt ceiling expires, when they basically run out of money. And so this bill is prioritizes three groups to be paid if money is no longer there, if they don't agree to raise the debt ceiling. They want to pay the bond investors, which a majority are China and government agencies, seniors, and then soldiers are the third. So if people would know that, perhaps they would think twice about it, but they don't hear that on the mainstream media, you know, television network, or on MSNBC, on CBS, ABC, whatever alphabet soup they watch. It's the same lies and talking points that do not reflect reality.
No, you're exactly right about that. Speaking of the media, I think the way the media has covered this Benghazi story, it's just incredible. I mean, the fact that they have allowed the Obama administration to run out the clock on this, I just find it appalling that there wasn't more coverage of this during the campaign. I mean, here you have an American ambassador shot. Then you have an administration for 3 or 4 weeks peddling an explanation that they knew fairly quickly was not true. But yet they're out there peddling this. The president of the United States is saying this at the UN. He's saying this on TV shows. Either he was not told that it's not true, or he knew that it was not true. I mean, it's really, really scary when the news media is this weak in doing their job. I mean, it really, really scares you because, you know, we need a media that is active. We need a media that is aggressive, respectfully aggressive. I don't like the shouting, but they can be respectfully aggressive and ask them questions, and they're not doing that. I mean, it's really, really scary. And this Benghazi story is, to me, exhibit A of just the media's just total in the tank for Obama. I mean, it's so obvious that I don't know how anybody doesn't see it.
Well, the media was applauding Mrs. Clinton testimony the other day, and I found the testimony appalling, and I couldn't believe my ears when she shouted, literally, "What difference does it make?" Hello, what difference does it make? There are 4 dead Americans. There's no accountability. There's no answer who gave the stand down order. And there's so many lies that have been proven so. I was even embarrassed with the committee that was listening to her testimony, and she did get a few pointed questions from Rand Paul, I believe, and she never answered them.
John McCain also, yeah. John McCain did a good job.
And John McCain.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, but it was embarrassing to watch the Democrats, you know. First of all, they were like saying, gee, thank you for having traveled so much for the country. Well, isn't that what the Secretary of State's supposed to do, travel? I mean, I don't know. I just felt, or and then the other one.
That
well,
is her job, yes.
Yeah, I mean, that's the job, you know.
And she's supposed to represent the interests of American citizens, and so are the consulates and the embassies across the world. And
well,
obviously they failed in these people, and they are just pointing fingers at each other, and they fired the wrong person. I think Ambassador Rice was the scapegoat in this thing, but it's just unbelievable that nobody is indicting anybody for just obvious dereliction of duty.
Well, yeah, that's exactly what it was. It was just dereliction of duty, and then to have these Democrats bring up Iraq, I mean, it's like that was just outrageous. They're bringing up the Iraq War and how we went to war on false pretense, and here is Hillary Clinton, who was one of the strongest supporters of the Iraq War, and who herself said that Saddam had WMDs. Her husband, as president, said Saddam had WMDs. So, I mean, it is amazing to me what is happening. But, I mean, I guess I'm not surprised when politicians are politicians, but I am embarrassed for the media, because the media ought to be stepping up to the plate and at least being honest, and they're not at this point. Well, we have a few minutes, and I wanted to get to France for a second, because I'm kind of confused as to what's coming out of France. On one hand, you have the president of France doing the class warfare, but then on the other hand, the Supreme Court said that those taxes are unconstitutional. And so what do you make out of France? I mean, is France just being France?
It's just an unbelievable mess because they raided the former President Sarkozy's house, and apparently he's losing his immunity against prosecution since he was defeated by the socialist François Hollande, who's the current president. And apparently Sarkozy has set up a business in England, and he wants to move there. But then they're accusing him of using illegal cash from France's richest woman that he used it to fund his 2007 electoral campaign. And the rich woman is Lillian Bettencourt, who is a L'Oreal heiress. And, of course, Mr. Sarkozy said it's not true. And they got all this information by literally breaking into his house without his permission and without probable cause, really.
Now, he can still
be sent to prison for
this. Go ahead and finish, because I was going to ask you a question. Go ahead.
He's also being investigated for other quote-unquote funding scandal, one linked to arms sales to Pakistan, and another one in which he said to have used millions in taxpayers' money to pay France to produce or make opinion polls that were favorable to him while he was in office. Well, we do that all the time in the U.S.
Yeah, I think so.
You don't have to pay anybody. They just do it by their own volition.
Right, exactly. But did you say L'Oreal, like cosmetics?
Yes, uh-huh. L'Oreal.
Well, that,
is in
wouldn't that make sense with his wife, Carla?
Yeah, but I don't know, because she's beautiful and she worked in cinema and advertising, whatever. I think she was a model.
Yeah, whatever she was. I mean, was she French also?
No, I think she's Italian.
Oh, okay, Italian. Okay, but I mean,
her name, I think, is Carla Bruni.
Bruni,
she's
right.
Italian.
That's the Italian name. But I was just thinking when you were saying that, you know, that Sarkozy was being funded by a significant or a very wealthy woman who was an heir to a cosmetic fortune. I'm just thinking, well, that and Carla, I mean, that has to go together. I mean, he needs probably $1 million account with that cosmetic company just to keep Carla happy.
No comment there.
No, I know.
Women,
I know.
This sounds like guys complaining that we women spend too much money, which is true, by the way.
Well, but I mean, I'm being. I mean, Carla. With, you know, I was being facetious. Carla Bruni, of course, a very beautiful woman, and she's a very pretty, or was, a very beautiful French first lady. And I, you know, that. But I'm just thinking when you mentioned that he was being funded by a. Air from this cosmetic company just occurred to me. The first thing that came to my mind was Carla. I mean, because of I'm sure she's had her share of cosmetic expenses over the years. But in a more serious vein, France is a mess, and in many ways, it's almost like Exhibit A of Europe. I mean, you want to see what's happening in Europe? Look at France.
And I'm not even sure Hollande is going to pay attention to the decision of the court, which found his 75% tax on rich people unconstitutional. And I still don't know if Mr. Depardieu, Gerard Depardieu, the actor and movie producer, has accepted Mr. Putin's passport offer yet. I hope
yeah.
he hasn't. But
well, the one thing that we've been doing here in Texas, perhaps you may be familiar with this. I'm going to create a marketing campaign for people to move to Texas, and I'm going to talk to the Attorney General. I'm going to write a letter to the Attorney General to say that Texas should have a marketing campaign all over the world. Bring your dollars or bring your money and bring your guns because they're safe in Texas. You know, we're not going to take your guns away, and we're not going to tax you to death. Everybody can move to Texas, and so that's our slogan, you know. Bring your guns and bring your money because they're safe in Texas. How do you
well,
like that?
Well, maybe Mr. Michelson can move to Texas.
Well, that would be great.
The golfer.
Yeah, the golfer. That would be great. I mean, he's. But
what
see,
was
I heard
that he, all about? He said that taxes were too high in California. He was paying 62 cents out of every dollar in taxes, and that wasn't working for him, so he wanted to move somewhere else. And then the next day, he retracted and apologized for being selfish. How are you selfish? I mean, you're paying so much tax, you're only keeping 38 cents of your earnings for every dollar, and you work very hard, and you're good at what you do. You have a talent. How is that supposed to be selfish?
Well, yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. I think it was a very stupid thing for him to say the second day.
I don't know who got to him, but obviously somebody criticized him and got to him to make him retract and backpedal and apologize.
Yeah, maybe so. I don't know either, but I think what where he was coming from when he made his apology was I think he felt like he didn't want people who are unemployed or going through difficult times to think that he's complaining that, you know, he's
I
got
see.
So much
okay.
money.
Okay, well,
I think
in
that
was vein is,
yeah,
is
he
a
was,
logical
think,
apology.
Yeah, I think he was saying, hey, look, you know, I don't like paying these kinds of taxes, but at the same time, I don't want to sound like a rich guy complaining when there are so many people in the country who are hurting. I think that's where he was coming from. I don't
okay.
know much about him. I don't know. I mean, I don't know.
I don't know either.
I mean, he's
but
a golfer.
But Mr. Depardieu, the French actor, he said that he has paid over 185 million euros in his career in taxes, and now they want 75%. So what he was saying that enough is enough, and I'm
yeah.
kind of on his side.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you. I think we got to stop. You know, we got to stop this war against successful people. I mean, I think they're doing their share. Look, my feeling is if you're successful and you have a company and your company employs X number of people, that is your contribution to society right there. You don't have to do anything
of
more
course.
Than that. Because all these
jobs.
And he
has created so many jobs.
Right.
And why is it greedy to keep the money that you have earned, that you have businesses with and hiring people, creating wealth for other people, but it's not greedy to expect handouts that you have not earned.
Right,
I don't
no,
understand
I,
that
I agree
mentality.
With you. I agree with you 100%. I agree with you 100%. You know, we celebrate the entitlement mentality. We say, hey, you're entitled to this. You know, you're entitled to this or that. But we criticize the people who are literally paying the way so that these people have a check in the first place. So, I mean, I'm very troubled by what's happened to the country. And I think people like you and I who've had the experience with communism, we probably find it even more appalling that is happening to the United States. Well, we're going to have to wrap it up. I just want you to say one more time the title of your book. It's available on Amazon, so go ahead and talk about it.
Yes, UN Agenda 21, Environmental Piracy, in paperback and Kindle. The Kindle version is $2.99, and it's the best investment ever because you are going to learn what UN Agenda 21 is in very short chapters, and it is all around you. You just don't know about it. And I've spent 2 years researching it. It has links and information, and it's all based in fact.
That's
right. So if you want to preserve your private property and your freedoms and your rights and your ability to be a free American, you need to read about UN Agenda 21, Environmental Piracy, at Amazon.
That's right. And we have on Facebook today, I put a link to the book when I promoted the show this morning. And on the show information, there's a link to your website. So the listeners can, through Facebook, can link directly to the book, or the ones who listen to Blog Talk Radio have a link directly to your website. So either way, they can get your book, and we definitely recommend your book. You're exactly right. It is the best $2.99, the best $2.99 that you will spend. And I will tell you that yesterday I spent about $3 getting some very, very tasty coffee at a very famous place that charges very expensive amounts of money for coffee. And I was thinking to myself, you know, maybe to the listeners out there, instead of going to that very famous place and getting that very, very expensive coffee, why not buy a copy of your book? At least you're putting something good in your head, you know?
Yeah, because we don't want to become Europe. We don't want to be told by the United Nations what to do with our private property, our land, and our economic freedom.
That's exactly right. Well, that's going to do it for today, Dr. Ileana Johnson-Poe. So nice to always talk to you on Fridays. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, Sylvia.
We'll
have a great weekend.
Yeah, we'll catch up with you the next time. I'm sure there'll be some breaking stories next Friday, too.
Until next time.
All right, good day. All right, we're going to take, that's going to do it for today, folks. Thank you so much for listening to our program today. We love talking to Dr. Johnson on Fridays, getting a good feel for the American economy and the world economy. And today, of course, we had some breaking stories that we wanted to bring to you, so I hope you enjoyed it. Everybody have a good weekend. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas.